You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hi, and welcome to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I am Grant Goldberg, joined by Spike Friedman, and we're also joined by a very special guest. We are joined by Ben Baldwin of Field Goals. Today's show is brought to you by Draft, and if you use the promo code LONFL, you can get a free draft on your first visit, so make sure you take advantage of that. Ben, we are more than excited to have you on the show. We're going to talk everything from being lifelong Carolina Panthers fans to Derek Carr and Blake Bortles being the same person, and everything in between. How are you doing this morning?
Good. Thanks for having me. Good to talk to you guys.
All right, Spike,
Grant, thank you. Yeah, thank you for the great introduction, Grant, the opportunity for me to tell you how I'm doing, which is fine.
I mean, we ask you every show, so I figured maybe you get a break. Maybe you're not having such a good morning. You'd like to stay quiet a little bit. But now that we've moved past it, everybody's doing good. We have a couple questions. We're going to start you off pretty easy. Like we said, we're lifelong Panthers fans. So how confident...
Before we dive in, Ben, can you credential yourself a little bit for the Locked On Seahawks listeners at home, beyond merely that you write for Field Goals? What would you say the approach you bring to analyzing football is?
Let me answer that first, and then I will give my credentials as a lifelong Panthers fan. I'm trained as an economist, as Spike knows, which leads to some fun arguments on the internet, which is what the internet was built for. In my job, I basically analyze data, so I try to bring the same approach to the NFL and sports in general. So the kind of method of analyzing data is you form a hypothesis, you gather data, and try to test the hypothesis. So, just as an example, so one of the things that I've been looking at a lot this season is why teams run the ball, and there have been a bunch of different explanations offered, and so far none of them have held up to scrutiny. So one example is if teams run the ball a lot earlier, then it wears down the defense, and the runs that are 3 and 4 yard runs in the first quarter become 5, 6, 7, 8 yard runs in the fourth quarter. And if you go to the data and you look at the number of or the success of rushing by how often teams have run the ball, there's just no relationship. So it's not the case that if you run the ball, then the defense gets tired and it becomes easy to run the ball. There's just no evidence of that.
So the body blow argument is dead. That's what you're saying.
Exactly. Well,
the body blow argument is suffering a series of body blows from Ben.
It's all right. Later on in the argument, it wears down and people start to agree with Ben.
Yeah. I appreciate the approach from Ben because it isn't just contrarian opinions for the sake of being contrary. It's in fact quite the opposite. It's contrarian opinions only when the evidence suggests that the contrarian opinion needs to be held.
Yeah, I that's a generous way of describing what I do. Thank you.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Now, great. Can we get some the crucial question about the Carolina Panthers heading into
So eager to ask about the Carolina Panthers and how we're such big fans. How confident should we be in the Panthers going into Atlanta and beating the Falcons, thus making it, you know, easier for the Seahawks to make the playoffs? We're assuming the Seahawks beat the Cardinals, obviously.
just like we assumed they would beat the Cardinals last December, right, to lock up that first round bye, or in 2013 in Seattle to lock up that first round bye.
Yeah, the Cardinals have a 3-1 record in Seattle in the Bruce Arians era.
So the 538 gives the Panthers a 39% chance of winning, which sounds kind of low, but home field advantage matters. The game's in Atlanta. And the thing that's sort of worrisome is the Panthers might not have anything to play for. The games are all being played at the same time, so they won't know. But the Falcons know that they are in a life and death situation. If they win, they have to go to the playoffs. But the Panthers are in the playoffs no matter what. And if the Saints beat the Buccaneers, which is likely, then the Panthers game just doesn't mean anything. So from that standpoint, it's sort of worrisome. But we just have to hope that our Carolina Panthers bring their A game on Sunday.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily worry about the Panthers, like, not trying, despite the obvious Cam slander angle from the Super Bowl from a couple years ago. Teams generally, when they have something to play for, even if it is just a question of what seed they have in the playoffs, do attempt to play. Although we are hearing that the Rams might bench everybody, which is weird, yes, because they are technically in play for the 2 seed, I believe, if things were all to break right. So that weirds me out. But again, I'm not super worried about the Panthers not trying against Atlanta. The problem is that Atlanta's like pretty good, and the Panthers are also just pretty good. So it's where home field advantage, yeah, the 60-40 sort of result does make sense.
Yeah, I think that, yeah, the Rams don't really have a shot at the 2 seed, but it'd be kind of...
They don't?
No.
Really? Yeah, they can't get there at all? Oh, did they lose to the Vikings?
It's either Minnesota or Carolina.
Oh, God.
Yeah, there's chance, though, that the Seahawks make a trip to Los Angeles in the wild card round, which is kind of scary, kind of fun, but there's a chance we'd be able to see it in person, so I might be rooting for that more so than anything else. Besides me being selfish to start this show, we've seen some of the takes that you're famous for or infamous for on Twitter. For those that don't follow Ben, you should. It's at GUGA31BB. I didn't want to butcher it by saying it all together. but he's of the mindset that Dak Prescott is better than Derek Carr, who is the same person as Blake Bortles, which we can all agree with, but dogs are bad? What is that?
So that's fair. I got a lot of pushback for that one. When you're a kid, you have you're very impressionable. And when I was growing up, there was this dog that lived in the house behind us, and it was aggressive and vicious and bit people and got them sent to like get stitches or the emergency room. So that was kind of my forming impression of dogs. And now I just have like a innate primal terror of dogs, and they can sense it on me and smell it on me, and it like nothing good comes of it. So it's not their fault, but I'm just terrified on a animal level of dogs.
All right, that took a turn. It got way darker than I thought it would be. It's gonna be like a simple explanation why like cats are better or something. But I'll lay off you like that. It's like when the Seahawks like go. And, like, teams know they have no running game, and they try to run the ball anyway, and they can just sense that it's going to be, like, a 2-yard loss.
Yeah. It's like Aaron Donald against the Seahawks offensive line. So I'm like Ethan Posick trying to block Aaron Donald, and they sense my fear.
I am currently sitting next to a giant fluffy dog, so... But I can assure you he wouldn't attack you if he saw you, but he would maybe bounce around near you. Okay. So please steer clear of Edgar Martinez Friedman, who is a good dog. All right, we should probably take a quick break. We're going to come back, and we're going to apply some stats, some video analysis to the Seahawks offensive line, to the passing game, to the running game, right after this quick break.
We're taking a short break from our interview with Ben. And we're going to talk to you for a second about Draft.com. Spike, you've had the most experience on this show about Draft.com, so why don't you tell the listeners about the Draft.com experience and why they should join us on that website?
Well, okay, so Draft.com, you've got a great app. You've got live updates. You can do... Basically, what you do is you do a fantasy draft, but you do it really quickly. It takes like 3 minutes. And you draft your top 5 players for the week. Everybody's doing it. They're getting in there. You can make a dream team if you want, if you just know who you want. Last week, I made a dream team, put Todd Gurley in it. I lost because I put Josh Gordon on my team before I knew it would be snowing in Chicago. It was a blunder. But I got Gurley on that team. I couldn't get him in the draft. But you can get whoever you want. You got a money back guarantee bonus if you use the promo code LONFL. You can rapid fire pick teams. You can do it as much or as little as you want. If you're a gambling addict, don't sign up because you can do it as much as you want, and it is so satisfying and fun. But again, if you have a problem with addiction, you got to stay there clear because it is that good of a product, Grant.
It's that good of a product that if you use it and you can't stop using it, like, it's a problem. Like, it's so good, it's bad. I think that, I'm waiting in the wings to try out Draft.com for myself, being that I'm not of age. But I've heard nothing but good things from the whole Lockdown Network. So take my word for it. Take Spike's word for it. Draft.com is where you need to go for a little daily fantasy draft. I think you can be in as many leagues as you want. And it's very, I wouldn't say cheap, but it's cost effective.
You don't have to spend much money on it. Yeah, there are leagues as cheap as a dollar, as much as way more than that if you want to get frisky. If you're a frisky millionaire listening to this podcast, A, PayPal me. Just hit me up on PayPal anytime. But B, you can certainly get that real sweet action on Draft.com.
Right, so take advantage of the promo code. Once again, it's LONFL, and if it's your first time, you get a money-back guarantee on your first draft.
All right, we are back on the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm Spike Friedman alongside Grant Goldberg and our guest Ben Baldwin. Ben, we got to do it. We got to talk about the Seahawks offensive line. You every week cut up all of the pass protection snaps to make it easily digestible for the average fan to be able to watch every snap, to be able to identify and take an opportunity to look at each individual offensive lineman, get a feel for how the pass protection game is growing or declining at any given moment. What are you seeing right now in this offensive line? Has it improved since Dwayne Brown's arrival? Do you think it is maybe approaching the level of only a below average unit? Is it still floundering? Where are you at with the offensive line right now?
It's really hard to describe because every time you think you have them figured out or a pattern, they just like completely do the opposite of that. So in the first four games after getting Dwayne Brown, their pressure rate allowed was better than league average. I think it was something like a top 10 pass protection unit as measured by the percent of Russell Wilson dropbacks he was under pressure. So it was a good stretch, and it looked like, wow, we got a left tackle and now our line is passable. And this was the Redskins, Cardinals, Falcons, and 49ers game, where it's pretty good. And then, in the four games since then, it's been, this is against the Eagles, Jaguars, Rams, and Cowboys, it's been really bad. So I've been making this chart where I compare the average pressure rate generated by a defense, and then compare that to how much pressure they get on Russell Wilson. So for example, the Cowboys pressure opposing dropbacks 36% of the time, which is actually second best in the league, which is extremely surprising to me because nobody thinks, oh yeah, the Cowboys fearsome pass rush. But against Russell Wilson, they pressured him on, I think it was 14 of 26 dropbacks, which was above 50%, maybe 54%. So that's not good. another hard thing is you can't, aside from Brown and Britt, you can't even say, like, this player is a good player or this player is a bad player. It's so different week to week. So against the Jaguars and the Rams, Posick just got destroyed by Calais Campbell and Aaron Donald, as many players do. And then against the Cowboys, he looked really good. And then against the Eagles, Ifedi looked pretty good. And then against the Cowboys, he just looked terrible. So it's really hard to say this is what the Seahawks offensive line is. It's just every week it's different. Every week, every player is different. And I don't know if that inconsistency is a coaching issue or it's hard to block for a mobile quarterback issue or a overall offensive system issue. It's just so hard to place a finger on.
Well, there's been like a lot of talk this year about the relative strength of defensive lines to offensive lines, sort of league wide. I believe pressure rates are up across the league as a whole. And something, just when you said those matchups, it was like, oh yeah, well, that makes a lot of sense because Calais Campbell and Aaron Donald are going to destroy Ethan Posick. And the Eagles, are so good as like a pass rushing unit, but they don't have that dominant edge rusher the way that Dallas does with DeMarcus Lawrence and the way that Oyve Arizona does in Chandler Jones this coming week. Yeah. So I'm wondering if there's something in like the fact that defenses can sort of exploit a really good matchup for an offensive line, but offensive line coaches aren't shuffling around their offensive lineups in order to prevent those sort of matchups. It feels like because the Seahawks have, and obviously it's fewer holes now that Reese Odhiambo doesn't play, but because they sort of have two pretty mediocre players on the offensive line in very different ways in Posick and Ifedi, that opposing defensive line coaches are able to exploit that through matchups if they've got at least one good interior or edge rusher. And most teams at this point seem to.
Yep, I think that's fair. There are some things Seattle can try to do. So they tried really hard to double team Aaron Donald, and it just didn't matter because he's Aaron Donald. So there are some points where like it looked like he would be double teamed, and he would just like it looks like an optical illusion where he just the lineman tries to make contact, and he just like slides off of them. It's really if he weren't doing it against the Seahawks, it'd be such a joy to watch. But it's. When Russell Wilson is ending up underneath him, then it's less so.
Yep, not great. And I know you don't cut up the run game because those are more complicated. Those are more complicated matchups to watch. It's also, as you've said, less influential in terms of game outcome. But is there anything you've seen at all in what the Seahawks have done over the past few weeks to suggest that they are even remotely capable of running the ball? Especially vis-a-vis a matchup with Arizona that has a really, really good rush defense.
I think the Seahawks are going to try really hard to run the ball against Arizona, and they're going to fail at it.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, look.
That's the hard-hitting analysis we bring Ben on the show for.
That sounds right. Based on all the evidence we have to this point, the Seahawks will attempt to run it, and it won't go anywhere.
I think Ben's theory is right. Like, he makes a hypothesis. The Seahawks can't run the ball. The data shows that. The game film shows that. And they're going to try to run the ball, and they're going to fail at it. I think that, you know, Ben's living up to his billing on the show. I suggested off air, you know, because the Cardinals have a really good run defense, like we were saying, that the Seahawks should just not run the ball and take that run defense completely out of the game.
Your thoughts on the Seahawks not running the ball at all?
So I think it's an interesting question is, what is the lowest percent of the time a team can run while still having the defense respect like play action and not just go full out pass rush every single time? So I think it's currently lower than what teams are doing, but I don't know what, like, if you ran 10% of the time, would teams still respect play action if you ran 20% of the time? And I don't really have a feel for that, but the Seahawks is currently constructed. It seems like they should try to figure out the answer to that question.
Well, and I feel like we kind of saw it in our week 8 matchup against Houston, where in the second half, felt like we were going in that play action over and over again. And in terms of running back rushing attempts in that game, including a Tyler Lockett jet sweep, we only had 17 rushes to 41 passes, and yet the play action couldn't have been more effective down the stretch, as Russell Wilson was able to turn 26 completions into 452 yards and 4 touchdowns. Yikes. That was awesome. That game was great. Remember that game? That was really fun. Yep. So I feel like that I don't know why, but like that sort of jumps out to me as like what the floor of plausibility is in terms of at least fooling a Mike Vrabel-led defense. I don't know. It might depend on the coordinator. I don't know if do people think Vrabel's good? I don't know. But oh my God. Do you guys remember that those running back, 17 carries for 3 yards?
Jesus. Wow.
Eddie Lacy had 6 carries for 0 yards. Thomas Rawls had 6 carries for -1 yards. J.D. McKissick had 4 carries for 6 yards. And Tyler Lockett had 1 carry for -2 yards.
Oh, that's the game where Odhiambo was playing left tackle and trying to block Clowney, and they just kept running at Clowney.
Yes. Oh, God. Oh, it's a night. Oh, and I think that again speaks to Well, it speaks to a couple of things. It does speak to the ability for defensive linemen to exploit terrible matchups, although it wouldn't have taken Jadeveon Clowney to destroy Arisa Odhiambo in that moment in time. God, it was so bad before Dwayne Brown got here. It's still bad, but it was so bad. I blocked 17 carries for 3 yards, and we won the game and scored 41 points.
I think the use of play action in that game is like, the Texans were like, well, they got to run the ball one of these times.
I think it was that game where Seattle had the ball with like a minute left in the first half, and they were in their own half of the field, and they were running play action, even though like there's no way you would run the ball, and it still worked.
Yeah, that had the Trey Madden. Man, that was the best game of the year.
Yeah.
Tanner McAvoy actually did good things. It's
too bad they canceled the season after that game.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. That game, oh man, remember when Deshaun Watson existed? That was fun. All right, well, we should take a break and come back. We're going to do a last couple economics questions with Ben. We're going to all learn something. No, I don't know if that's But we'll be back. More Locked On Seahawks right after this.
We are back with Locked On Seahawks. I'm Grant Goldberg, joined by Spike Friedman. You can find both of us on Twitter at Grant Goldberg, at Spike Friedman. And we're joined today, like you're listening to the rest of the show, by Ben Baldwin. And Ben, put on your John Schneider hat for a second. If you're going to re-sign one guy, either Paul Richardson or Jimmy Graham, who are you re-signing and why?
Yes, this has been an ongoing debate on Twitter, and I think I'm in the substantial minority, but I would definitely take Paul Richardson. Number one, I think it is, I guess this applies to both players, but it is valuable to have a receiver who has some sort of chemistry with Wilson, and Richardson has been on the Seahawks since 2014. He and Wilson seem like they're generally on the same page. Richardson, I think, is more valuable than Lockett because he has a much larger catch radius, so it's more forgiving for balls thrown his way, where he's more likely to come up with something that's thrown outside the frame of his body. He's a downfield threat, and I think most importantly, he'll be only 26 next season, where Jimmy Graham will be 32. And for somebody who relies a lot on his athletic gifts, I'm kind of nervous about how Gramble age, and even this season he's been valuable in the red zone, scoring a lot of touchdowns, but outside of the red zone he hasn't really produced a whole lot. So if this is kind of the beginning of the decline phase of his career, then I'm not really super excited about locking him up. Where for Richardson, a lot of times receivers are mid to late 20s is where they blossom, so he is the guy I would want to lock up.
Spike, do you have any preference for Richardson to Graham?
I think I agree. I also look at the rest of the roster right now, and like Nick Vanek gets you some of the way there at tight end. And obviously Jimmy Graham is a uniquely strong red zone target right now. That ISO play that we're running with him is working to great effect after a couple of years of not doing that. But Graham is not multidimensional as a tight end. He's not a great blocker. He hasn't been running the sort of like seam routes and like getting those catches, the sort of Travis Kelce stuff or Zach Ertz stuff that you kind of want from a tight end in 2017. He hasn't been doing that. So it isn't as big a loss. And wide receivers are expensive on the open market. I don't know who we would get to replace Richardson. I don't really trust us in terms of drafting receivers. I wish we were in a situation where Lockett and Richardson were sort of up at the same time and we could make a more informed choice about both of them. I feel like we don't know what Tyler Lockett is a little bit right now, which is disorienting because after his rookie year, I thought we knew a lot about how good he could be. So for me, yeah, it makes sense that you kind of have to keep Richardson just in terms of how the rest of the roster is constructed and some of the Seahawks cap and draft limitations this particular offseason.
Yeah, Ben brought up a point about Jimmy Graham's athleticism. I think even, you know, this year we're starting to see some of that fade away. We're not seeing him stretch the field vertically like we've seen him in the past. He's dropping balls, and he's not breaking tackles like he used to. And I mentioned that a lot on the show, but you see him catch a pass 8 yards down the field, and it's just those 8 yards that you're getting. And it's disappointing to see, and having paid so much, given up so much for him. And I'm of the mindset, like, he's scoring a lot of touchdowns, but if you look at the overall production and, like, the way he's using the offense, I don't know if it's worth the price tag for having Jimmy Graham.
Yeah, I'm pulling up his football. I'm just going to pull up his D-Y-A-R. Ben, how do you pronounce D-Y-A-R?
I say D-R, but that's not the official. I don't know what the actual official
sorry,
version
we
is.
We can go out and make it the official, like, the phrase for it.
Graham is average this year. He's at 5 DR. So it's which is a Football Outsiders metric in terms of accrued what is it? Accrued value per play over the course of the season. Jimmy Graham is a ever so slightly above average tight end on aggregate. Obviously he's incredible in the red zone, but otherwise he just isn't doing enough and is behind, you know, guys like Seals Jones on Arizona. He's behind Cook in Oakland, which is crazy. He's behind a declining Jason Witten. He's behind Austin Hooper, much less that sort of top tier right now of guys like Gronk and Kelsey, Henry, Brayton, Ertz, who are those top five guys who are playing the way that you would be paying someone like Graham to play. Does that make sense? Did I pull that? Great.
Yeah.
Awesome.
In short, Jimmy Graham is too expensive for what he's doing.
Yeah.
And I mentioned that maybe I'd like the Seahawks to play in Los Angeles if they make the playoffs so I can see a Seahawks playoff game. But going through the potential matchups, obviously if Seattle makes the playoffs, you have Los Angeles, Carolina, Minnesota, and New Orleans. Which of those four teams are the most favorable matchup for the Seahawks to go in and win a game on the road?
Yeah, that's a hard question.
Yeah.
I think if I had to choose, I think I would pick the Rams because we know that if we played them, it would not be at 10 a.m. and it would not be a long travel distance. So even though they're really good, their quarterback is still Jared Goff, who I'm not convinced is great. And I think it's possible that if Wagner and Wright were healthy, then Seattle could beat them.
Well, and we did beat them in Los Angeles this year. We had Richard Sherman, but, you know, it's worth saying.
I mean, like, and the game just got so out of hand off, like, a couple, like, misplays for the Seahawks. And I think, like, in the very first quarter, like, obviously it was still in play for the Seahawks to come back, but it didn't feel like, you know, the avalanche hadn't come down yet. And say if Russ hits Doug Baldwin on that long pass play, or they're just not in the backfield completely on the first few drives, then I feel like it turns out to be a completely different game. But obviously, it wasn't. The Seahawks got blown out by 35 points. But I don't think we're going to see a duplicate performance of that if Seattle has to go to Los Angeles in the playoffs.
Yeah. Yeah. If McAvoy doesn't fumble, if they don't have a 60-yard punt return.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, and a lot of those guys are back, and hopefully McAvoy, a lot of the guys on special teams are back, and we're playing much better this week. And hopefully just McAvoy doesn't put the ball on the ground again. I'll also throw out, I don't mean to malign you as we close out the podcast, as America's strongest Panthers fan, I'd say you are the one who keeps pounding the hardest. But for me, I think the Panthers jump out as a matchup where the Seahawks, it's sort of a mirror game in a lot of ways, and something that I would kind of like to see. Explain to me why the Panthers are very good, both in terms of why the Seahawks should fear them, and again, just to get me hyped up going into this weekend, believing they can beat the Falcons.
So, so my Panthers credentials. So I'm a Stanford alum, so I watched Christian McCaffrey a lot in college, and before the NFL draft, I sort of half-jokingly was like, it's been fun being a Seahawks fan, but whichever team drafts Christian McCaffrey, they're my new team. So I was a Panthers fan long before it was cool, now that everyone else has come along for the ride. But yeah, they've been playing very well in recent weeks. Their ground game was very bad for most of the season, but in the last few weeks, it's come along. They've finally, much like the Seahawks, finally realized how to throw the ball to Jimmy Graham in the red zone. The Panthers realized they can throw to Christian McCaffrey on third down when he's covered by linebackers, and nobody can really stop that. So that's really helped their offense a lot. And their defense is kind of the same good defense with a great defensive line that we've kind of expected to see from them for the past few years. So I think they're a good team. They very well can beat the Falcons, who have had plenty of issues.
Yeah.
It's possible that the Seahawks will go to Carolina to play them in 2 weeks if things break a certain way. So we would go from being Panthers fans to not Panthers fans really quick. But let's hope they put Seattle in the playoffs first.
We're going to have to stop pounding real fast if it turns out that way.
Yeah, let me just say that the Panthers headline I read before this podcast today was that they are currently breaking their huddles with Ron Rivera going Mr. Richardson in support of Jerry Richardson. They're racist.
The Panthers are canceled. Never mind.
So I just want that was all. That was, this whole podcast was a big gotcha, Ben.
Yeah.
You walked right in to supporting Jerry Richardson. We got you.
And Cam Newton, which is another story. But
I like Cam. You don't have to go there. All right. Well, I think this is great. I think we've all learned something about numbers and the offensive line, and learned nothing about dogs or why it is good to root for the Panthers. So I think that's about what we wanted to do over the course of this podcast.
Yeah,
great. You wanna say all the things we gotta say on the way out the door?
Yeah, of course. We covered all our bases, and we're crossing home right now. So go to iTunes, leave a 5-star review, and leave your Twitter handle in it, and you'll be entered to win a Pro Football Focus Edge membership. So you can have the stats if you want to use them. You can use them to compare them to other metrics. Yeah, you can have access. It's about $40, so you're not having to pay all that money. So throw your hat in the ring. You can go to draft.com and play a few drafts. Draft a team of all-stars. Beat down Spike. You can use the promo code LONFL, and you get a free draft on your first visit. So if you haven't played draft and you want to beat down Spike, go ahead and take advantage of that promo code. I think that covers it.
Wait, Ben, do you have anything you want to promote?
Nope, keep pounding.
The hashtag, the great Panthers hashtag, keep pounding. Perfect.
Just whatever you do in life, keep pounding. For Locked On Seahawks, I'm Grant Goldberg signing off. Thank you to Ben for joining us this morning and appearing on our show.
And I am Spike Friedman, also signing off, also thanking Ben.
Thanks, guys.